Hello, welcome to the Salca Poetry Project. This is Ana Maria Hernando, and along with Kenneth Robinson, poet and sweet soul from Nashville, Tennessee, put together a series of interviews about poetry and the arts. These series have been funded in part by a grant from the Boulder Arts Commission, an agency of the Boulder City Council.
This is Kenneth. These interviews we've set up are with creatives that we appreciate and admire. And today we're fortunate to have with us Brian Buckley, a champion of poetry, who, along with his wife, Kate Hunter, founded the Innisfree Bookstore here in Boulder, which is one of only three all-poetry bookstores in the United States. And it's a Boulder treasure. And he also is involved in other projects that we'll hopefully get into. But I want to begin, Brian, by talking with you about wildness. You and Kate said in writings about Innisfree that you wanted to create an island of heather. And when I think about that, I think of the heath and the wildness of the heath in the highlands. And so would you share with us about your views about wildness and poetry?
Yeah, sure. In terms of the shop, you know, Innisfree translates from the Gaelic to Island of Heather. And then the idea that in some ways, the wildness of the modern world, you can walk in and take a respite from that. But there's also the other days we have as human beings where you can walk into poetry for the wildness, you know, from the outside. So it can play both ways. And the idea is that there it is on the corner, full of the wildness, full of the possibility, full of the opportunity, and that the people who sat down to write were also trying to encapsulate, to distill a sort of wildness into form, structure or non-structure to be passed on. And that energy is there, certainly blowing in, with the southern sun coming in as well. There is some wildness. But there is that dichotomy, like some days the modern world beats you up and you can come in for a different wildness. Mm-hmm. Or you know, someday maybe there's something calm outside and then something will strike you in the shop that blows up or rises up within you and you go back out differently as well. And to that we are thankful to the authors of the books, but also the poets who come in and give of themselves every Thursday night to read, yeah, including both of you who've read at the shop.
It was such a joy to read at the bookstore. It's such a beautiful setting with people who really appreciate poetry. And I love what you're saying about the nourishment that comes with touching wildness, right? And that the poem can touch that place in us that awakens that.
Yeah, no, and Innisfree, the Yeats poem, like God of Innisfree, but Yeats was trying to touch that wildness in Ireland, you know, invaded by the British, Catholic Church came in and put a bit of control over the country and language as well, and he was trying to go back to the fairies and the Druids' time, yeah, and to start the Irish mythology again in a wild way.
And reclaim themselves, yeah, mm-hmm, in that, and I think about poetry for me, as a part of reclaiming myself when I'm trying to write. Yeah.
And then sense begins, and then understanding begins, yeah, by going on that journey. But you're right, the wildness is a great word to talk through this.
Yeah, mm-hmm, beautiful.
Well, as Kenneth said, you know, we are so fortunate to have in Boulder a bookstore like Innisfree, a center of poetry, such a place of joy and so many feelings. And for me, when I think of a place like your bookstore and the enterprise of beginning such a thing, the first thing that comes to me is the revealing of this generosity of spirit of you and Kate to want to bring this forward.
Yeah.
And the question that arises, you know, it's I imagine in many ways might have been going up the hill to bring a project like this forward. But there has to be, you know, like this urgent need, mm-hmm, of poetry that move you to do this. And and some understanding or wanting to give this to the community. So would you tell us more about what are these needs that you have?
No, great question, Anna. Thank you for caring to ask that. So some of it is about honoring how we stepped into ourselves, into our wild selves, perhaps. My father was an electrician, finished high school, went to work, recited poetry all the time at dinner. So you're a little boy. Your father's different in those moments. Then you go on in life, and in times of, for me personally, spent 4 years in Thailand learning the language, teaching as well, but coming back to the States feeling a bit lost, a bit stranded. What captured me, what helped me land back home was a poetry and translation class taught by Martha Collins. The class after that, who do I meet? Kate. So there's this path of poetry that sustained me, then reached out to me, and then maybe a good question for our lives is, what got us this far? And how do we honor that back? How do we return a favor for something that made us laugh, cry, breathe, wake up again? So when, you know, I kind of reached my 20 years of teaching high school, the idea, Kate and I had always talked about it, it was now's the time to know either way. And that's part of wildness too. So the wildness, there is a release, there is a letting go, there is a nakedness of, at least I'm gonna try this. At least I'm gonna answer that call. And to this day, we were fine if it worked, and if it didn't, you know, we'd be here with you reading poems, and that would be okay too. But the idea, like honoring the path, maybe that'll be a path for someone else. And then the community that can conform around that. That's been really powerful. Like I said, you've both read at the store, Anna, your artwork was up during Ernesto the Cardinal's first visit. And as Goethe says, go boldly and the mighty forces will follow. And we've had so many people reach out to us, touch us, who are part of our family now, you know. But it was, you know, it's the roots of a life and trying to nurture those. And if they meant something to someone 40 years ago, maybe they'll mean someone for the next 40 years. Yeah.
I'm struck by what you said. When my dad, when my father read poetry, he was a different person. And that quality that the poem takes us into a different consciousness, into a different part of ourselves. And to think of you as a child witnessing that and then experiencing that, getting that transmission through him, very beautiful. I was thinking about, for me, the poem is so much about championing the feeling life. And I know that when I am trying to avoid my feelings or stay away from myself, so I have to stay away from poetry, because that's going to open that up. So I'm thinking about, so a lot of times when I'm going for the, going back to the poem, I'm wanting to touch the feeling part of myself. And I'm just wondering about, for you, when you're reading and when you're writing, what is it you're hoping for yourself, or what you're going in search of?
We have a poet who works with us up at Innisfree, Joseph Braun, who, you know, recently was stressing stopping to write a poem is a revolutionary act in the pace of our life, in in the electronicness of our life, that is a revolutionary act. And I think I share that when I begin to write. The poem I crafted recently, I had to stop and write. There were five things hovering, you know, outside the heart, outside the head, that I kind of wanted to sow or attempt to sow into some sort of pattern, representation, manifestation. And that's part of it as well. And then part of it is too, having three daughters, wanting them to know that this part of their lives in the future, whether it be through poem, painting, meditation, that they need to see us as parents, Kate and I, engaging in these pursuits as well. So there's a lot to it, but a lot of it does feel imperative Maybe poets felt that in the past. I think in our community at Innisfree, people feel it's throwing more sails up to the wind so that it's more visible, that the air is around it, not the dust. And this is sustenance for us. Let's continue the tradition.
Mm. The revolutionary act of stopping to be with yourself, yeah, and to find that inner beauty and reflect on it. Mm. Yes, and to offer it up. Mm. That's what I keep hearing you say, yeah, is having received what you have through the poetic,
yeah,
and passing that on.
Yeah, and it, as you get to know poets personally from their books on the shelves, and then when they come in, there is an incredible bond among poets, an incredible kinship, no matter the nation, no matter the decade of birth. That is, wow, I get to go through the world now with these folk keen on the same things.
Be a part of that,
yeah,
lineage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Very fine.
You know, you grew up in West Roxbury, Massachusetts, and you say how you felt surrounded by the love and admiration of Irish poets. And now you're talking about your dad reading poetry at dinner time. But you, in this phrase, you are talking about the knowledge of poetry by the whole community, as an act from the whole community to bring it forward. Could you tell us more about that, about your memories of that? And
so like in my town, you know, people are still a generation or two off the boat from Ireland and things like that, and so part of it, it's identity and keeping the homeland alive through verse, mm-hmm, in the connection of, you know, foremothers and forefathers. And there was also a playfulness of taking the Queen's language, mm, and putting in some Irish themes or Irish resistance, you know, in the Queen's tongue, you know, in this kind of more powerful nation's tongue. And there was a pride, you know, like when Yeats won the Nobel Prize, and whoa,
yes,
you know, in the newer language, and that the Gaelic had been suppressed, but we can still take on this language for self-identity and still express who we are and things like that. And then, you know, in class, in high school, I had a great teacher, Ken Kahn, who, you know, connected some European poetry with Whitman and Dickinson and Stein. And then you start to see poets have, in some ways, the same torch, the same duties that they impose upon themselves in other cultures about, you know, not in a haughty way, not in a I'm the artist, look at me way, but I'm looking for the truth in the culture and where it is seen and where it's suppressed. And whether that's as an individual's emotional life, whether it's a group of people in a greater cultural emotional life, but those pursuits are there, and they were for me as a child.
You know, with what you were saying and this that you are saying now, it's like I always find that poetry always calls you to nakedness,
mm-hmm,
to the essential, mm-hmm, to being present with the life itself. And it always feels like such a gift to be in the presence of, mm-hmm, that.
Yeah, and to find your identity through poetry and to express your identity through poetry. Yeah.
Yeah, and then, so as a city kid in Boston, you know, people still serve Robert Frost in good amounts. But then I became curious about the woods.
Mm.
But I didn't see a lot of woods growing up. But these felt like wild places I had to get to,
mm,
to be more human on earth. And I could feel those were lacking in me as a junior in high school, as a senior in high school. I don't know what a birch tree is. I don't know what a ravine is, you know, and then these, you know, poets in my area who've been through some of the towns I've been, but also found the woods, called to me. And some of the words of their poems felt magical.
Mm.
Maybe because I didn't use them a lot, but maybe they are magical. Stone, rock, brook.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Poets pointing us to the things that we need to know, the things that we need to have.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to speak some about the bookstore, and I know there's so many choices to make. in relation to the bookstore, practical choices, aesthetic choices, and would you speak about those choices when you're deciding what books to put on the shelf and what poets to stage, which poets to stage, and also anything you want to say about building community, because I really hear that in your discussion today, is how committed you are to that bond between poets and poetry lovers.
No, thank you, Ken. I happen to work in the Grolier Poetry Bookshop in Harvard Square in 2000-2001, and I got a little sense of how a poetry bookshop might work and what community means. So one thing, when we opened Innisfree, we knew, and it's just a beautiful thing, celebrate the poets within your radius. So we have a lovely collection, including Anna's books on the shelves, of Colorado poets, and it's closest to the front of the store, right on the right side. It's beautiful, it's growing, and we know we get to converse with these poets in person. And so that's delicious. It's delicious, you know. And then from there, I think, you know, we have our book where people make recommendations. We have books Kate and I love. We have people we care about writing to us, suggesting books. And then, you know, every now and then some of the people in the area who teach poetry share kind of what they're teaching and what are some books they highly recommend. And it all kind of fuses. So when the store opened, it would have seemed funny to someone with an MBA. There was a third of the shelves empty. But we wanted people to know we're calling you to give us your suggestion. And this isn't talk. This is really, really what we would like to do. And that's really powerful. And then the community part, like, I mean, I do believe in the circle of poetry. So we need the writer. We need the listener. We need, in many ways these days, the small publisher. We need storefronts where possible. We need, you know, children in school. So I do feel for Kate and myself, like, you know what? Maybe it's permanent, and maybe it's our time now to do our part in the circle. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been taught by great teachers. We've had great poets. Some people come to read. We get to carry their book, shout their book, share their book, and then the circle continues to weave. Mm-hmm. So it's beautiful. No, what's funny is there's a fact it wouldn't survive otherwise, but it's also beauty that's what makes it go.
Right, you know, right. That it takes so many.
Yeah,
you know, the joy of that collaboration.
Yeah, and that we all feel lifted that it's 5 years in.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Kate and I giving each other a high five saying we did it. It's like a huge hand to another huge hand saying we all did it.
And so many people having a stake in the success of the bookstore as a hub for this and a way for that connection to happen with all those people.
And it's nice because, you know, writing can be solitary, can be painful,
right?
Can be difficult in topic, can be difficult in dissatisfaction with, I wanted it to be better, I wanted it to be different. Mm-hmm. And then in the shop, you can have a respite for an evening of things before we return to those solitary pursuits.
Yes. Also, on the subject of community, I know you're the executive director of the Northern Arizona Native American Foundation, and that you offer scholarships to Native American children for degrees and studies in the arts. And I just want to hear about that, because I'm very aware that when people are marginalized and seen as the other within a culture, that if they're able to express through art and through poetry who they are, we're not able to continue to deny their place in the culture, or to deny their souls, because the evidence is so strong, or it's more difficult to deny it in any case. So I'd love for you to share about your experiences there.
You said it so beautifully. I'll just continue your thoughts. So I was fortunate to spend 4 years at a school with Navajo children, and as the language arts teacher, it was such an easy go-to. The kids, the students had this, you know, it's you know, by and large, there was a rhythm that was finding itself in different ways in the school, but certainly through poetry as well. You know, there was, because of the challenges, the hardships, the lengthy lack of services, there was an identification with rap music. And uh-huh. and there was plenty of students writing their own lyrics and things, which when we would look at in the room and maybe take it into, leave it as it is, or tweak it in a more poetical form. Maybe we'd read some poems about the same subject and they'd return to their lyrics and things like that. And you couldn't stop the students from writing it. I mean, we had journals on Monday, they'd hand in how much they wrote on the weekend. You know, it was just, you know, it was nonstop, it was beautiful. You know, there was much to be edited, and so do we. We edit as much as well, you know? And then, so it became this great thing. We had a photo project one time with some photos from around their home connected to verse, and one of the students ended up at the U.S. Senate reading his poem about Grand Falls, which only flows March, April each year near their home in the White Mountains, and he just served it up. The landscape, the history, the language, and it was another powerful moment where, so poetry touches us individually, but he was, you know, summoned to read as part of a poetry evening in the Capitol, and poetry leads to those places too. But yeah, no, it was, the voice was there. I like how you said when things are written, recorded, shared, there's an impetus, there's a power gaining, there's a momentum that, you know, we've changed things just by writing. And I know many of the students I'm still in touch with. That's still true.
So beautiful.
Yeah, no, and some of the store, some of the proceeds go to that every year. And there's a lot of generous people who contribute to that. And it's in its 10th year. And, you know, it's unbelievable. And some go to University of Arizona, which has the Poetry Center, which has a fine, fine collection of Native American poets in its center as well.
Thank you so much for your leadership in that. So important. One last question, Anna, unless there's something you want to speak to before we talk about the connection between poetry and coffee. Innisfree is both a bookstore and a cafe, coffee shop. And I know for me, when I'm writing or reading poetry, there's usually a cup of coffee nearby, if not a spot of whiskey. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be some kind of mystical connection between the two.
Yeah, and there's, I mean, there's mystical, there's just palate enriching connection.
That's right.
There's also political too, you know? So when we, if I can, you know, we found the most fair trade coffee around, mm-hmm. Conscious Coffees, and that was our first phone call. Because if the poets were trying to be naked, you know, we had to be naked in the source of the coffee. And is it organic? Is it working conditions, sustainable and fair and with labor in mind? And so that was that. Now, in terms of the book and a cup of coffee, yeah, what a marriage. You know, what a long-term marriage, even with the tea, you know, but like a warm cup, there's the earth. And that's often the lens of poets and, you know, things like that, from that vantage point of the grand old mother and the sharing of a cup.
Yes.
You know, the communal aspect of I'm sitting down with someone over, you know, something warm brewed with a book in hand, you know, the papyrus, the aroma. You know, there can be something ancient about that, as ancient as the kinship of the people sitting down.
And the sensual experience.
Yeah, and the sensual experience, you know. And the reminder that it's not your work time. It's not your structured time. It's not your defined place or spot. You decided to be there with a book and a friend and a warm drink, and that all brews and grinds together and, you know, becomes a human cup as well. But yeah, no, it is magical. We would have loved to have just done a bookstore, to be honest. Practical side. We needed some of the coffee, tea, just to like keep a storefront open in the day of Amazon and Nooks and Kindles and things. And it's been a blessing. because there's been a community around that too, who walked by some chains to be in a locally present coffee shop. And you know, the beats, there's history and energy, and it's true. Tuesday nights at our open reading, people come in for their cup. It's an amazing series going on Tuesdays at 7, and they settle down with their cup, helps break the ice even a little, and then the readings begin.
You know, I come from Buenos Aires, and throughout Argentina, but I grew up in Buenos Aires, is such a culture of coffee shops. And coffee shops are the place where there is not such a thing of you go quickly, you get your coffee in a paper cup and you go. It's a place with tables, you meet with your friends, you talk about these very most intimate things, you catch up. Also, coffee shops are the place for creative exchanges, for new projects, and this open place of wandering with words and always coffee. So now, when you were talking about this, it's like, this is the perfect marriage, as you say, is that these two coming together and opening a time where it's outside time and you come together.
Yeah, no, and if we talk about stopping to read a poem, write a poem as revolutionary, stopping to sit down with a human in an economy that doesn't measure that and value that always, you're making a decision too, you know, which is beautiful. And you know, coffee shops were full of people gathering for change, and you know, Boston, it was the pubs and the revolution, and but coffee shops have played a prominent role too. We did have someone come in to talk about coffee shops and revolution, Mark Rich, not too long ago, and it's true. Where do people gather now? Where do people gather in the times of private space? Mm-hmm. You know, where can they come and meet strangers?
Thank you so much for your part in the revolution and for being on the front lines of that in the poetic sense, and for talking with us today. It was a pleasure and an honor to hear from you and hear your views on poetry.
So thank you also to all the listeners, and again to the Boulder Arts Commissions, that this project is possible because of a grant that they gave us. And the Boulder Arts Commission is an agency of the Boulder City Council. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.